Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
New York, just like I pictured it.
New York City, tourist destination, movie backdrop, center of power and money.
We make the rules, pal. The news, war, peace. Famine, upheaval, the price of a paperclip. We picked that rabbit out of the hat while everybody sits out there wondering how the hell we did it. Now, you're not naive enough to think we're living in a democracy, are you, buddy?
Money never left New York, but power, political power, pulled up stakes a while ago. It went west and south. New York City, once the kingmaker engine of American politics, hasn't produced a presidential candidate of note since FDR. But in 2016, suddenly we have the ultimate showdown between power and money. Clinton versus Trump. Hillary Clinton, who built her power base by becoming a New York senator and whose current address is in Westchester County. And Donald J. Trump, who owns more buildings than Gordon Gekko could dream of. The White House would be the first building Donald Trump would live in that he doesn't own. To find two New York behemoths at the center of the political universe, you'd have to go all the way back to the 19-teens and 20s. To when the Tammany Hall political machine ruled. Synonymous with urban corruption and machine politics, it was just the target a rising young progressive reformer named Franklin Delano Roosevelt would mark for destruction. To get at Tammany Hall, Roosevelt, the patrician, educated man of money, would have to take down power himself. Four-term New York Governor Al Smith, Tammany's most beloved son. Historian Terry Galway's book, Machine Made, Tammany Hall and the Creation of Modern American Politics, says the battle between Smith and young FDR would change the world.
For Franklin Roosevelt, Tammany Hall was almost the epitome of evil politics. And of course, historically, I mean, he was correct. But what Franklin Roosevelt didn't see until, I would argue, the 1920s, is that in the 19-teens, a new generation of Tammany politicians was coming to power with an understanding that government could be used to better people's lives. With the rise of somebody like Al Smith, who had literally dropped out of grammar school 2 months before his graduation because he needed to find work, the dynamic changed, and Tammany Hall became this instrument for social progress.
He may have been an old, uneducated has-been to progressives like Roosevelt, but Al Smith could see farther into the future than FDR. As a New York State senator, Smith led the investigation into the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory blaze of 1911, in which 146 young, mostly female immigrant workers were killed, making it the city's deadliest industrial accident. Smith found that a crisis, a disaster, was a political opportunity. Healing the wounds from an industrial accident delivered votes that no amount of corrupt political patronage could match.
Out of the Triangle Shirtwaist Fire, you have things like the beginnings of the minimum wage. Well, what does that have to do with fireplace safety? Nothing, except that Smith and others saw the opportunity for real, profound change in American society. And then once Smith becomes governor, you know, they set in place the modern social welfare system that we know today.
It was this big picture of Smith's that Roosevelt missed, all caught up in his political chess game against Tammany. Roosevelt couldn't beat them, so eventually he joined them.
Al Smith's sort of progressivism had everything to do with improving the condition of working people's lives. And I think that Roosevelt saw that it was working. The pragmatist in Roosevelt, and he was a pragmatist at the end of the day, the pragmatist saw that not only was it working, it was getting votes for people like Al Smith.
Roosevelt found he needed to learn at the foot of the master, despite the unsavory reputation of the past. And FDR softened his combative style, historian Terry Galway says, after he nearly died contracting a permanent paralyzing disease, probably polio, in 1921.
Roosevelt clearly becomes this heroic figure after polio, where before, I would argue, he was an amateur politician. But polio made him a different person and allowed him to work hand in glove with figures he would have excoriated a decade before. And it certainly helped him form this very important relationship.
Protestant Roosevelt enthusiastically nominated Al Smith as the country's first Catholic presidential candidate at the 1928 Democratic National Convention, where he refers to Smith as the happy warrior.
We offer one
who has the will to win, who not only deserves success, but commands it. Victory is his habit. The Happy Warrior, Alfred E. Smith.
And it was that happy warrior who encouraged Roosevelt to run for his vacant governor's seat, a post Roosevelt narrowly won the same year Smith lost his bid for president. Roosevelt's subsequent rise to power and Smith's loss of it ultimately spelled the end of their relationship, and Smith's contribution to the New Deal is rarely, if ever, mentioned.
Franklin Roosevelt really never acknowledged publicly what he said privately to people like Francis Perkins, that the New Deal was invented in many ways by Al Smith, by his Tammany cohorts in New York in the 1920s.
So when you watch Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump tonight, just think of old Al Smith, the folksy shoot from the hip man of the people, and Roosevelt, the man with the familiar dynasty name.
Now, boys, all together for Al Smith. Here he comes, all together.
We now know it was New York's Mr. Roosevelt, not New York's Mr. Smith, who went to Washington in the end. Our thanks to historian Terry Galway and his book, Machine Made, Tammany Hall, and the Creation of Modern American Politics.